content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Kenny Park Yee for the North Carolina Reading Service.
And this is the April 2023 edition of Education Today. We'll get started with an article from U.S. News titled, Education Department to Deploy Secret Shoppers to Detect Predatory Practices at Colleges. The announcement is an escalation by the Biden administration to identify institutions that violate laws and regulations governing their participation in federal student aid programs. Written by Lauren Camera, published March 14, 2023. The Education Department will deploy secret shoppers to monitor the enrollment and recruitment practices and financial aid counseling provided by colleges and universities to detect any bad actors luring students with deceptive or predatory tactics. Secret shopping is another tool in FSA's toolbox as we expand our oversight work to hold predatory schools accountable, said Richard Cordray, the chief operating officer of the Education Department's Federal Student Aid Office. Our focus, as always, is to ensure that students, borrowers, families, and taxpayers are not being preyed upon to make a quick buck. The announcement is the latest escalation by the Biden administration to identify post-secondary institutions and especially for-profit colleges, which have a history of exploiting underserved communities that violate laws and regulations governing their participation in federal student aid programs. The department, under Cordray's direction, also recently warned schools that it plans to act aggressively when it finds misrepresentations made to service members and veterans that could ban schools from participating in the federal student aid program, which accounts for the vast majority of for-profit schools' revenue source. In addition, Cordray established a new tip line for sources to report potential violations. The actions come in the wake of ongoing complaints by military-connected students who were led to believe that their GI Bill benefits would cover the entire cost of their education, only to find out later that they would have to take out additional loans to complete their courses and graduate. Some were even told to sign paperwork without realizing that they were signing up for a loan or received bills for loans that they never applied for. Others were encouraged to enroll in programs that they were incorrectly told were approved for GI benefits but were not. And some were promised a military discount on their tuition which did not exist or was not applied. Schools that engage in fraud or misconduct are on notice that we may be listening, and they should clean up accordingly, Kristen Donahue, FSA's chief enforcement officer, said in a statement on Tuesday. But schools that treat current and prospective students fairly and act lawfully have nothing to fear from secret shopping. Specifically, the secret shoppers are tasked to look for misrepresentations regarding the transferability of credits, job placement rates, completion and withdrawal rates, graduates' future earning potential, career services, cost of attendance, the amount of federal aid needed, and accreditation status. Cordray said that the findings could serve as evidence to support an ongoing investigation or provide evidence needed to open a new investigation, and that the department will share findings with the Office of Inspector General and other state and federal law enforcement agencies. The next article comes from Education Week, and it's titled, The Gender Pay Gap is a Problem for Teachers Too, by Madeline Will, posted March 13, 2023. Female teachers make less than male teachers on average, despite making up about 77% of the profession. We are presenting evidence that female labor in public schools is systematically sidelined or devalued relative to men's labor, said Michael Hansen, a senior fellow in the Brown Center on Education Policy at the Brookings Institution and a co-author of a new report that quantifies the gender wage gap in the teaching profession. Female teachers make roughly $2,200 less than their male counterparts when all sources of school-based income, base salary, extra duty pay, and summer school jobs are combined, and the data is controlled for factors like school poverty and teacher experience. The Brown Center report was released Monday, the day before Equal Pay Day, which represents how far into the year women must work to earn what men earned in the previous year. In 2022, female workers in the United States earned an average of 82% of what men earned, according to a Pew Research Center analysis. The study found that the largest driver of the gender wage gap in teaching is the supplemental pay that teachers receive for taking on extra duties in school, including coaching and supervising other student extracurricular activities. The gender wage gap is $714 in base pay, $1,204 in extra duty pay, $180 for a non-teaching job in the summer, and $80 for summer teaching, according to the researchers' reviews of 2015-2016 and 2017-2018 federal data, the most recent available. Among the extra duty assignments that come with stipends, coaching had the highest gender wage gap, followed by student group sponsors. Male coaches and student group sponsors earned $1,647 and $1,009 more, respectively, than their female counterparts with similar characteristics. Male teachers are slightly more likely to participate in the extra paid work at schools and are much more likely to be paid for it, especially if their school principal is also a man, the study found. Even though teaching is a predominantly female workforce, men tend to dominate the upper rungs of school and district leadership. Women make up 56% of the nation's principals and just 30% of the superintendents of the largest 500 school districts. Subsection: One Female Teacher Pushed for Change. The study's results weren't surprising to Gretel Rodriguez, an English teacher in California who said she's long pushed for pay equity in her career. For example, as a cheerleading advisor more than a decade ago, Rodriguez discovered that she was paid less than half for the whole school year than what coaches of male-dominated sports were making in a single season. She and the other cheer coaches protested, and administrators ultimately agreed to pay them per semester rather than per school year. Another challenge: when male teachers got more of the extra assignments that came with a stipend than female teachers. Sometimes, Rodriguez said, admin would say, "I chose him because no one else was interested. We were never told about the opportunity." Rodriguez said her local teachers' union led efforts to enshrine in the contract a rotation policy for extra duties. Administrators had to email the whole staff if an opportunity for an extra job that came with a stipend came up, and then rotate those opportunities among all who were interested. Having such a clear policy in place can help circumvent gender-based discrimination that may stem from chummy relationships among male principals and teachers, said Rodriguez, who is the chairperson of the California Teachers Association's Women's Caucus. "When you come into a profession that's predominantly women, you look for an ally in the room," she said. "You reach out to the person you think you can relate to or build rapport with." Past research has found that male teachers are 12% more likely to leave their school if the principal was a woman than if the principal was a man. The study found no such effects for female teachers. That study found also some evidence that male principals might give male teachers more favorable treatment, including more pay and a higher chance of promotions. If you're male, you're immediately shot up into administration in the first 2 to 5 years, especially if you have a male principal, Rodriguez said, adding that she's been discouraged by administrators for pursuing that career path. And we'll cut that article short for time. The next article comes from the New York Times, and it's titled, "UPenn Accuses a Law Professor of Racist Statements. Should she be fired?" Amy Wax and free speech groups say the university is trampling on her academic freedom. Students ask whether her speech deserves to be protected. By Vimal Patel, posted March 13, 2023. Amy Wax, a law professor, has said publicly that, on average, blacks have lower cognitive ability than whites, that the country is, quote, better off with fewer Asians as long as they tend to vote for Democrats, and that non-Western people feel a tremendous amount of resentment and shame. At the University of Pennsylvania, where she has tenure, she invited a white nationalist to speak to her class, and a black law student who had attended UPenn and Yale said that the professor told her she had only become a double Ivy because of affirmative action, according to the administration. Professor Wax has denied saying anything belittling or racist to students, and her supporters see her as a truth-teller about affirmative action, immigration, and race. They agree with her argument that she is the target of censorship and wokeism because of her conservative views, all of which poses a conundrum for the University of Pennsylvania. Should it fire Amy Wax? The university is now moving closer to answering just that question. After long resisting the call of students, the dean of the law school, Theodore W. Ruger, has taken a rare step. He has filed a complaint and requested a faculty hearing to consider imposing a, quote, major sanction on the professor. His about-face prompted protests from free speech groups, which cited one of tenure's key tenets, the right of academics to speak freely, without fear of punishment, whether in public or in the classroom. For years, Mr. Ruger wrote in his 12-page complaint, Professor Wax has shown callous and flagrant disregard for students, faculty, and staff, subjecting them to intentional and incessant racist, sexist, xenophobic, and homophobic actions and statements. The complaint said she has violated the university's non-discrimination policies and standards of professional competence. Her statements, the complaint added, have led students and faculty to reasonably believe they'll be subjected to discriminatory animus if they come into contact with her. Professor Wax has fought back, arguing that the university is trying to trample on her academic freedom. Universities want to banish and punish anyone who dares to dissent, who dares to expose students to different ideas, she said on a recent podcast. That is a really dangerous and pernicious trend. Professor Wax did not agree to interview requests, but at a time when scholars say their speech is under attack from the left and the right, many free speech groups, including the Academic Freedom Alliance, PEN America, and the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, have criticized the dean and said that Professor Wax should not be fired because of her public statements. Academic freedom cannot be a privilege of those who only espouse prevailing views, but a protected right of all faculty, the Academic Freedom Alliance wrote in July to the university's president, M. Elizabeth McGill, arguing that the school should end the process to sanction Professor Wax. But for many students, her public speech, which often mixes public policy with insulting broadsides, is the point. Students have asked, aren't these statements relevant to her performance in the classroom? Don't they show the potential for bias? And does this professor and this speech deserve the protection of tenure? Dean Ruger, who declined an interview request, seemed to embrace these concerns by including a litany of Professor Wax's public statements in his complaint. Free speech groups acknowledge that some personal discussions with students, if true, could be deemed abusive and are not protected by tenure, but they have winced at the dean's inclusion of public statements in his complaint. Professor Wax is a test case of academic freedom, right up on the line, said Alex Morey, the director of campus rights to advocacy for the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression. But, she said, we have not seen any evidence that it crosses the line. She added, academic freedom has to protect the Amy Waxes of the academic world so that it can be there for the Galileos of the academic world. The next section is called Building a Public Profile. Professor Wax cut an unconventional path to Penn Law School. Raised in an observant, conservative Jewish family, she received a bachelor's degree from Yale and a medical degree from Harvard. On a podcast, she said she realized medicine was not for her and in 1987 received a law degree from Columbia University. In the late 1980s and early 1990s, as an assistant to the U.S. Solicitor General, she argued 15 cases before the Supreme Court. And after 7 years at the University of Virginia, she joined Penn with tenure in 2001. Though Professor Wax had been a subject of debate for years, students' demands for sanctions began in earnest in 2017 after she co-wrote an opinion article in the Philadelphia Inquirer. She argued that many of the country's social problems could be traced to veering from 1950s norms, like getting married before having children, respecting authority, and avoiding coarse language. The article said, all cultures are not equal, and lamented the single-parent antisocial habits prevalent among some working-class whites, the anti-acting white rap culture of inner-city blacks, the anti-assimilation ideas gaining ground among some Hispanic immigrants. After some students called for her firing, conservative media rallied, allowing Professor Wax to spread her views across the conservative firmament over the years, including writing for the Wall Street Journal and appearing on Tucker Carlson's daytime show on Fox Nation. Along the way, her rhetoric grew more extreme. She has described some non-Western countries as shitholes and stated that women on average are less knowledgeable than men. Speaking with Mr. Carlson last year, she said American blacks and people from non-Western countries feel shame for the outsized achievements and contributions of Western people. On a recent podcast, she said, I often chuckle at the ads on TV which show a black man married to a white woman in an upper-class picket fence house, she said, adding they never show blacks the way they really are, a bunch of single moms with a bunch of guys who float in and out, kids by different men. She has also acted as something of a provocateur on campus. In 2021, she invited a white nationalist, Jared Taylor, to a class and then lunch with students. She argued that he was an appropriate speaker for a seminar on conservative thought, according to a grievance she filed against Dean Ruger this past January and obtained by the Daily Pennsylvanian, the student newspaper. Mr. Taylor has said that when blacks are left entirely to their own devices, Western civilization, any kind of civilization, disappears. Throughout, the administration had supported her right to speak and took significant action only once in 2018, in reaction to her comments on a podcast about affirmative action when she said that black students at the law school do not perform well. I can think of one or two students who've scored in the top half in my required first-year course, she told the host, Glenn Laurie, a professor at Brown University. After some students objected, Dean Ruger disputed her data and took away her first-year course. She did not have a right, he said, to violate confidentiality about student grades. Professor Lowry, a black economist known for his contrarian views, agreed in an interview that disclosing confidential student data to make racial comparisons would be unacceptable. But, he said, Professor Wax did not do that. She was just engaging in, quote, loose talk. Perhaps, he said, a teacher should not discuss students that way. But violating privacy, he said, I think that's a stretch. And we'll have to cut that article short for time. The next article comes from USA Today, and it's titled, Los Angeles Education Workers Poised to Announce Strike That Likely Would Close Hundreds of Schools. This is posted by Kayla Jimenez, Tammy Abdullah, and Nervi Shah on March 14, 2023. Thousands of Los Angeles Unified School District employees plan to announce a three-day strike at a rally on Wednesday, in a move Superintendent Alberto Carvalho told parents would likely force the nation's second-largest school system to shut down for days without access to even remote classes. About 30,000 workers who are members of SEIU Local 99, which represents bus drivers, custodians, cafeteria employees, campus security, and teaching assistants, are asking for the district to use the district's $4.9 billion in reserves to invest in staff, students, and communities to pay for a 30% raise and $2 per hour equity wage increase. The district's 35,000 teachers, represented by United Teachers Los Angeles, are expected to join. Workers are fed up with living on poverty wages and having their jobs threatened for demanding equitable pay. Workers are fed up with the short staffing at LAUSD and being harassed for speaking up, Local 99 Executive Director Max Arias said in a statement. The school district has offered, in part, more than a 15% raise, retention bonuses, and to bring its minimum wage up to $20, Carvalho wrote in a letter to parents on Monday evening. Schools will be open on Wednesday, said Shannon Haber, a spokesperson for the district, in an email to USA Today. If the union and the district don't come to an agreement and schools close, more than 600,000 students and their families would be affected by the tremendous upheaval, Carvalho said. The closures would hit when students are struggling to make up for time lost to the pandemic and end-of-year tests loom. The truth is we are between a rock and a hard place, he wrote in the letter to parents. A strike would impact our students right now, but accepting all of our labor partners' demands would mean future program cutbacks, possible job losses, or even bankruptcy, he wrote. We simply cannot fund ongoing expenses with one-time funds such as federal pandemic aid. Subsection titled, How Should Parents Plan? If this strike does occur, despite our best efforts to avoid it, the most likely outcome is that we will have to close schools until the strike ends, the school district said in an automated call to parents obtained by USA Today. We want to apologize to you, the call began. You do not deserve this, and our students especially do not deserve this. We will give you as much advance notice as possible, but we encourage you to begin discussions with your employer, child care providers, and others now, the recorded message continued. We are committed to continue good faith bargaining with our labor partners around the clock to reach an agreement and prevent a strike. Subsection titled, Strikes Rebound After a Decline. Teachers in a number of school districts across the country have gone on strike over the last year. Just this week, teachers from across Texas gathered at the state capitol, demanding better pay and working conditions. And in 2022, the number of workers involved in major strikes surged to 120,600 over the prior year, according to an analysis of Bureau of Labor Statistics data by the Economic Policy Institute. Still, it's a significant decline from pre-pandemic levels in 2018 and 2019, EPI said. Other federal data showed that in addition to a shortage of teachers in some regions, custodians and bus drivers, among other school workers, have been in short supply. One survey last summer found that close to a third of the nation's school districts had vacancies in transportation or custodial staff. That's only added to teachers' stress and feelings of burnout. And we'll have to cut that article short for time. The next article comes from NBC News, and it's titled, State Lawmaker Opposed to Free School Lunch Proposal Says He's Never Met a Hungry Minnesotan. I have yet to meet a person in Minnesota that is hungry, GOP State Senator Steve Drazkowski said ahead of a vote on the legislation. By Dara Gregorian, posted March 14, 2023. A Republican state senator in Minnesota said Tuesday he was voting against a bill to provide free breakfast and lunch for school students, in part because he'd never encountered anyone in the state who was hungry. I have yet to meet a person in Minnesota that is hungry, Senator Steve Drazkowski said in remarks on the floor of the Minnesota State Capitol in St. Paul before voting on the legislation. I have yet to meet a person in Minnesota that says they don't have access to enough food to eat. Now, I should say that hunger is a relative term, the 58-year-old legislator added. I had a cereal bar for breakfast. I guess I'm hungry now. Drazkowski was first elected to the state Senate in 2022 after serving for about 15 years in the state house. He represents a district in the southeast part of the state along the Mississippi River. The bill's author, Democratic Farmer Labor Senator Heather Gustafson, said it's estimated that almost 275,000 students get free and reduced-priced school meals in the state. She said another 18% of students who likely would qualify haven't submitted the necessary paperwork to do so. Roughly 1 in 6 children are food insecure. That means they don't know when and where their next meal will be available, if they get one at all, Gustafson said. She said passing the measure, which would cost $420 million over the next 2 years, is, quote, the right thing to do. Being hungry makes learning almost impossible, Gustafson said. Let's feed the kids. The measure passed by a vote of 38-26 and is expected to be signed into law by Governor Tim Walz. Drazkowski called the bill pure socialism. This is about the government dictating to kids what they're going to eat and how much they're going to eat. He said any additional funding should go to improving overall education. That's what our schools are for, he said. Drazkowski's office did not immediately respond to requests for comment on his floor remarks. This next article comes from K-12 Dive, and it's titled, Top EdTech Sites Used by Schools Employ Extensive Tracking Tools, by Anna Merritt, posted March 14, 2023. Dive Brief. Nearly all top ed tech sites use extensive tracking technologies, according to an analysis of sites endorsed and scraped from 15,573 school domains by researchers at the University of Chicago and New York University. A majority of the most cited ed tech websites use cookies and trackers, which are not malicious but still record information on anyone who visits, researchers said. A more alarming discovery, the researchers wrote, is that 7.4% of these edtech sites use session recorders that can capture more information, like which links a user clicked on and data they may enter but not submit. In interviews with 18 school district officials and IT personnel, the study found the districts lack resources to handle privacy and security issues generally when it comes to edtech because there is so little district training available. Additionally, researchers said those deciding which edtech to use often lack room to negotiate their contracts over potential privacy and security concerns. Dive Insight. The Chicago NYC study follows a January report by Internet Safety Labs that found 96% of apps used or recommended by schools share students' personal information with third parties. According to the latest study, the top 10 EdTech domains districts referred to online were Zoom, Scholastic, College Board, PowerSchool, Khan Academy, Frontline Education, ACT, S'more, Starfall, and Clever. School district leaders often are either not aware or do not have enough sway in negotiating privacy and security measures in EdTech contracts, said Marcini Chetty, a study co-author and an associate professor in the Computer Science Department at the University of Chicago. Collection of this kind of data by EdTech vendors may pose cybersecurity risks to schools too, Chetty said. Yet schools are often also not prepared to handle cyberattacks, given they are typically understaffed in the field. If a school doesn't have good cybersecurity staff, then they just don't know how to deal with those incidents, Chetty said. The shortage of cybersecurity professionals makes a huge difference in terms of making and keeping schools secure. And we'll have to cut that article short for time. The final article comes from the Washington Post, and it's titled, "Ousted Florida College Diversity Leader, I Am the First Casualty," by Jack Stripling, posted March 10, 2023. The top diversity officer at New College of Florida has been fired as a newly appointed crop of conservative trustees delivers on its promise to root out diversity programming from the small liberal arts institution in Sarasota. The dismissal of Yolady Rosario Hernandez, who uses Z-Zer pronouns, comes on the heels of a vote by college trustees to eliminate New College's Office of Outreach and Inclusive Excellence. The move, while not unexpected, signals a broader remaking of New College, which Governor Ron DeSantis, Republican, has identified as a staging ground for a larger anti-woke agenda that has become a central platform for his likely presidential bid. In January, DeSantis appointed 6 new members to the college's board, including conservative activist Christopher Rufo, a vocal critic of college diversity programs. And we'll have to cut that article short for time.
We've run out of time for this episode of Education Today. Please be sure to tune in next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Kenny Park Yee for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Education Today is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.